From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com.
Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. This week, my guests are producer Russ Randolph and guitarist Zion Godshaw of the Livetronica duo Boombox. Godshaw and Randolph met about 7 years ago while working on the Heart of Gold band record At the Table. Back in June, Boombox released its second album, Downriver Electric, to rave reviews. Let's get to the interview. Let's start with you, Zion. You're the son of legendary keyboardist and vocalist Keith Godshaw and Donna Jean Godshaw McKay. So it goes without saying that you've been brewed in a big vat of music from infancy onwards. Do you remember your first musical memory, I guess? Do you have an indication of what that was? It might have been in the womb, even?
I can't really think back to when there wasn't music, you know, going on in my head or around me. It's always been there.
Do you remember, you know, somebody handing you an instrument for the first time, or what you were first playing around or playing on as a kid?
Yeah, I played the drums when I was, you know, real little, and, you know, all the way. I mean, I still play the drums occasionally, but that was definitely my first instrument.
And Russ, you also started playing drums fairly early on?
Well, not like, you know, Z started when he was around, you know, two or three. Somebody gave him a kid. I was a little older, you know. My uncle gave me a drum set when I was like 12, and pretty much self-taught until like college and stuff like that. But we're both drummers. We both still, you know, bang around and keep our chops up. And that's how we, you know, come up with ideas and concepts and, you know, shit like that.
So tell me about Muscle Shoals, Alabama. It seems an unlikely place to be a hot spot for new and exciting music.
For those who are not aware of Muscle Shoals history, new and exciting music has been coming out of here since, you know, all of time. The Native Americans, you know, were here. They called the river here, the Tennessee River, the Singing River. Back in the 60s, it was a hotbed for, you know, R&B. Aretha Franklin, you know, Wolf Pickett, Otis Redding, all those cats are here cutting records. Even the Stones recorded here, Bob Dylan. I mean, everybody has made a pilgrimage to the Muscle Shoals area, to whatever that natural energy is here. So, I mean, I think it's a natural progression. And like I said, back in the 60s and 70s, it was really a hotbed for commercially charting popular music at the time. And then we don't have, like, at the time, we didn't have, you know, 4 or 5-star hotels and really nice accommodations for artists, and people wanted to go, I guess, back in the, you know, when we got to the cocaine days, people wanted more of a party, and the scene kind of fell off. But now, I mean, it's really there's a lot of cool bands working out of the Muscle Shoals, Alabama area, and, you know, we're very proud to be a part of it. We played a festival the other day in Denver, and as we were driving to our set, the drive-by truckers were playing on stage, and I thought that was really, really cool. Another Muscle Shoals band, so.
That's fantastic. And you obviously know about this rich musical history because you've been involved behind the glass. You've been doing a lot of production in addition to your own projects. How'd you get into producing in addition to following your own musical muse?
It's just kind of the path that I had taken. You know, I'd always been the guy in the band that was lugging around the PA gear and stuff like that. And, you know, high school, college age, when, you know, you got a lot of things going on, it was very difficult. It's actually one of the things that drove me and Zion to play together, is that we were both frustrated with trying to get a, you know, traditional type, you know, 4 or 5 beat band off the ground. You know, I got into college, I had to, you know, take a career path here, whatever, and frustrated with bands, so I jumped into the commercial audio kind of realm and really fell in love with it. You know, I love, you know, mixing bands live, and I, you know, traveled doing that for a while, and was very lucky to be able to work with some really cool engineers and producers here in the Shoals area. This is a small area, so, I mean, like, if you're a production person here, you do work in the studio, but you also work live, and you're probably going to spend some time at the local pro audio shop, you know, renting gear, selling gear, and so you wear a lot of different hats and get a lot of really cool experience. So, and that was really my, you know, career path until, you know, me and Zion got together working on a record, like, 7 years ago. when we started in the studio, I thought, man, you know, we both have these similar kind of frustrations with traditional bands and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, here we are now.
Yeah, I'd like to get back to that in a minute. But first, Zion, you spent a lot of time in the 90s DJing. How did you first get into electronic music and then decide to go ahead and pursue that?
Well, at first, I didn't really like electronic music. I was just into, you know, playing instruments and trying to get bands going. It just took, you know, it took one warehouse party, and I think it was Oakland, California, that I got to see what a DJ could really do to a room full of people and how essential there of combining, you know, live instruments with all that. You know, you can really maybe harness some energy and, you know, who knows, but I saw a lot of potential there. And it was from those days, you know, the early 90s.
Did you buy a secondhand set of decks, or did you start following around various other DJs and seeing what they were doing? Tell me how you got into to actually doing it yourself.
I immediately started going and seeing different DJs playing, and you meet people along the way. And, you know, eventually, yeah, I think I got my first set of techniques and, you know, just started getting records and learning how to mix, but mainly doing a lot of watching, too, watching what really good DJs, how they approach things and how the crowd reacts to things, you know, what play when and all that.
Kool-Aid Smile from Boombox's sophomore effort, Downriver Electric. Russ, you were mentioning this earlier. Tell me how you both met through the Heart of Gold band.
Steve's mom has a recording studio here in Alabama, and they were looking to kind of upgrade recording studio gear, that, you know, and that was really going to be my involvement in the project initially. You know, kind of help them upgrade the studio stuff and just kind of get them rolling, that I was kind of planning on kind of walking away. But so happened that, you know, ended up asking me to stay along and engineer the project. Well, at the same time, Z lived in San Fran at the time and was coming out here to do a record with his mom. You know, he wanted to do a mom that really showcased her voice and was really a record set up, you know, for her. And that was kind of his intentions. And we were both on similar paths, a total different kind of direction, coming from different directions. We ended up working together, you know, on this project for, you know, months and months and months together, just hanging out. You know, we'd be the ones there late night working on, you know, things together. And we actually did some programming on that record. There's a track called At the Table, the title track off that record, is really the first kind of programming that we did together. Z, you know, came out to Alabama with a drum machine in hand. You know, he had one of the drum machines that we initially started working on. And he had, you know, these songs, and that, I think that was kind of his second kind of goal. You know, we're going to do this record with his mom, then he had plans of, you know, studios happening there, going to cut another record. Well, during all this time, you know, we start bouncing ideas around and all this kind of thing, and, you know, Boombox just kind of happens out of that, you know. But, you know, I'm an engineer, but, you know, and I'd been interested in the DJ world, but I never really had the right, you know, experience until after me and Z met. I'd seen DJs, but I didn't see the true potential. And we took a break, actually, recording that record, the Heart of Gold Band record, and went out to Burning Man and just finally got my head torn off by the right DJ in the right moment, the right party. You know, that's what it really took for me to see the potential and the power of electronic music. But anyway, long story short, you know, we get back, and Z had already kind of been writing these tunes on the drum machines, and we just start, you know, just busting the tracks out together, start working on them and refining them and getting up to a point where we, you know, kind of felt good about them. And then we put together a demo, which actually became our first record, Vision to Backbeat. We knew kind of direction we wanted to go, but we didn't know exactly what we wanted to do. But, you know, this is, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago now. I guess the record's about 7 years ago, so this is 6 years, something like that. Anyway, we did that record. We went on the road with the Heart of Gold Band, and we got back home, and at the same time, we're still working on Boombox, but we spent about a year after that in the studio just working on tracks and whittling away at grooves and beats and just understanding and just kind of the concepts of what we wanted to do for a band. And we said, man, with the two of us, you know, we can still add that element of a, because, you know, he's a guitar player, you know, singer, and we can add that live element to this DJ world that we both really love. and it would scratch the itch that we were both frustrated with. Like I said earlier, with the traditional four, five, six guy bands, it just seemed like a painless, like this light opened up from the sky. Like, holy shit, this is it.
I've been wondering about that because, you know, Zion does play guitar and you have this electronic background, but you also have this live organic instrument in there as well. Do you think that that's the sound of the new generation, that these five, six guy bands are dinosaurs, that it's all going to be about paring it down to maybe a live drummer and a DJ or a live guitarist and a DJ? Do you think that, you know, that's the new sound that's happening?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems like it's not necessarily about how many guys are in what. It's just, you know, what their sound they're going for, you know. In different styles come in and go out. And, I mean, there's definitely been an increase in people who play instruments jumping into the pool of electronic music, for sure. And, yeah, I mean, we'll continue to see that. But I don't think that that's going to be king of anything necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will become a player. I think the electronic world has been very distant from America or the world's living room. I don't think it's been like commonplace, you know, for everyone. But I think it is becoming more and more of a viable. I mean, it is a real product now. People do give electronic acts respect as real artists and real bands. It took us a while. I mean, a lot of people didn't really understand what we were doing, but I mean, now the world has developed enough. I think it's pretty much in everybody's field of vision at this point in time now, and it's kind of seen as a regular thing. But like, see, I don't think it's going to take over. I mean, they're still, you know,
good music is always key.
Yeah, I mean, a good band with the right headspace going for a very pure thing with an audience is still going to be a magical experience. And regardless if those guys are performing with laptops, they're performing with, you know, guitar and tambourines and, you know, whatever. I mean, it's
live.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
What can you tell me then about your first release, Visions of Backbeat, and the evolution that's taken place over the past 5, 6, 7 years to where you are now with last month's release of Downriver Electric? Where did you kind of start, and where has that evolution taken you?
We're just trying to refine our rhythmic sensibilities, and being on the road and playing every night definitely has, you know, helped us do that, you know, and helped us look more for the, you know, to the next step, you know, as far as, you know, what we want to do with our songs and how we want to approach them. But it's just been a slow refinement of our ability to, I guess, approach the beats, you know, how to really get it to, you know, swing with the crowd and all that. We've really gotten a lot better at that since Visions of Backbeat. Visions, we knew what we wanted to do, but since then we've kind of at least begun to start to do it.
Also, when we recorded Visions, we never played a live show, ever. It was more of a concept of what we wanted. Like, when we recorded the tracks, like, I was on one machine, Zion was on the other machine, you know, and we would just kind of mix back and forth. And we've definitely evolved since then. Playing, you know, on the road for, you know, 5 years or so definitely gives you a lot more wisdom as far as where, like, you were talking about the swing and the way, you know, grooves should happen and the transitions. And you increase your vocabulary beat-wise, and you can have more of a, I guess, more of an eloquent conversation with the crowd. And that only comes from being on the road and playing night after night after night to different crowds, and in the beginning having people look at you like you're aliens, and then having kids that come out and know your material and can sing along and that kind of stuff, and all, you know, all that in between just kind of builds you into, we're just better at being boombox than we were 5, 6 years ago. We're going to keep doing that.
Being on the road may not teach you what works, but it definitely teaches you what doesn't work.
Boombox's record Downriver Electric, right here on the Unts Podcast. You've been roaming the country this summer, going from festival to festival, playing to these huge crowds. And then during the year, you hit a lot of smaller clubs and theaters. Is there a setting that's more conducive to a boombox showcase? Have you found like the magical environment, or do you feel like, just like your music is an adaptation of all the styles that you're into, that boombox changes from night to night based on the crowd?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'd like to say there's like one great spot, but it can happen anywhere. And I mean, we've had great nights in terrible places and terrible nights in great places. And I'd like to say, you know, Mile High was, you know, the best, you know, but who knows if it would be the next time. I mean, you just never know with places.
Okay. So let's talk about gear. Russ, you've been in production a while. What has become an absolutely essential piece of gear, not only for you, but for other producers that you know of? And maybe if they don't, they should be grabbing it, maybe both for the studio and for the live setting.
And I think this is pretty much commonplace with most modern producers. Ableton software, Ableton Live, you know, like most, you know, it's almost kind of a joke now. A friend of mine sent me a message, you know, hey, I've got Ableton, I just bought a MacBook Pro, an APC for you, I guess I'm a hipster now, that kind of thing. it is a joke, but it is real. I mean, like, we're in studio right now. Hey, we're in a really nice studio, full-blown Pro Tools rig, but I've got my MacBook Pro set up on a table, my APC 40 running Ableton, and we're doing our pre-production for some remix work we're doing, you know, in here. And I think with the portability and the potential that a producer has now is amazing. Like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, completely unheard of. And with the quickness of being able to get something from what you're hearing in your head to actually, you know, oh, this is what, you know, and just showing your whatever, the people around you, or even if you're a solo producer, just putting out tracks. You know, I think, you know, the MacBook Pro and Ableton Live type software, you know, I use Logic too, but with Ableton, for what it's doing right now, taking the studio world into a performance platform, a live performance platform, is absolutely amazing. All the looping technology, and then there's a lot of other software out there that's doing the same kind of thing, but the digital world right now is absolutely an amazing place, and there's tons of people making all different types of crazy controllers and ways to get more of a, you know, an actual user interface or a real type interface for the software. So for me, that's what's really happening right now.
Alrighty. So you're in the midst of a nice fall swing that's taking you through much of the South and the East and then back West. When that wraps up, what's next for Boombox? Are you guys going to go back into the studio, or are you continuing to just play? Because it's been a while since your last album. I'm not sure if you're ready to get back into the studio again, or if you just want to stay out there on the road.
I think we're pretty much just, we've come up with a studio kind of game plan that we're sticking to, a pretty strict regimen of getting home and, you know, a couple of days off, and we're back in the studio working hard at it. We've taken much time trying to figure out exactly kind of our approach and workflow and the way we want to create. It's very easy to fall into traditional electronic stereotypes and stuff, and it's taken us a while to figure out how to stay organic and still build tracks the way we do, but still make that transition into the digital world. Like I said earlier, like the laptop thing in Ableton is a very important world to us. But there was a time when we were very much against it. We were like, hell no, you will never see a laptop on stage with us, because it has to be a real mix between the drum machine, the hard mix, the way a DJ would mix. But, mm-hmm. You know, we're having to adapt to technology and stuff like that, but we're, you know, that's our drug right now, is jumping back in the studio and creating new tracks. You're going to see a bunch of stuff from us for the next year or so.
That's fantastic. Zion Godshaw, Russ Randolph, thanks so much for being on the UNS podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's UNS podcast. Thanks goes to Aaron Dvorak with the Madero Group, and of course my guests, Russ Randolph and Zion Godshaw of Boombox. They're in the midst of their fall tour, so make sure to check out the UNS.com to see when they'll be in your area. Next week on the program, the Gentlemen of Papadozia will be my guests on the UNS podcast. This live Tronica quartet from Athens, Ohio, has taken the summer festival scene by storm. They'll be headlining the first night of the Workout Festival this weekend and One Earth next weekend. Keep your eyes on those guys. Remember to visit theUNS.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the show, or you'd like to be a guest on the program, contact me at anand@theunst.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theunst.com. Catch you next week.